Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
This is who Malone is. He came from Boston, where he was during the
This has essentially been Gina's life's work. We established a team of foot soldiers who want to help Sue and Joe Sr. get justice for Father Joe. But justice doesn't just end with Father Joe, because what he died for, what he worked to fight for and report on, is so much bigger. The opinions expressed or views expressed do not necessarily reflect or represent those of the host. Such views are merely opinions expressed, and everything that we have discussed on this podcast and what Gina has discussed is still so far alleged. So we have Gina back. Gina, if you've listened to season one of Deadly Diocese and now season two as well, she's become an integral part of this investigation. And I'd like to welcome you back, Gina.
Thanks for having me. My uncle, I was born into this cult. My uncle, my first memory of him was terrifying. And then I had to grow up and see him at every holiday, first communion, whatever, right? So my mom was one of 11 children and he was the oldest. And, you know, with 11 children and 32 grandchildren, there's a lot of family get-togethers. And so every time we had one of those, we would have to see him. And I never liked him. He never liked me. It was obvious. We were mortal enemies my whole life. But I really thought that he didn't like our family and would really steer clear. I mean, I have letters that he wrote to my mother back in the early 70s when I was first born, of him telling my mother how much he hated her and that he didn't want either of them to die knowing how, or feeling the way about each other like they do right now, and weird, mean things like that. So all of these crazy, every single family event had some weird, annoying story about my uncle. And I avoid saying his name now, so I just refer to him as my uncle because I just don't even like to say it out loud.
So who was Art Smith? He was a man we spoke about in season one. To recap, he was on the diocese chopping block. He was bad PR. But they still allowed him to re-enter the call to God after being sent to treatment a few times for abuse or suspected abuse.
My mother got remarried, and my little brother and little sister are from her second marriage. And I was 10 years old when my sister was born, and then maybe 13 when my little brother was born. And so I am already in a adversary position with my uncle. We already don't like each other. And I kept that going. I really didn't want him anywhere near my sister and brother. And I believed that they were safe because he didn't like us. Well, the mistake that I made was going away to Australia for college in 1994, and I ended up staying another semester. So I was gone almost a full year. And during that year, wouldn't you know it, that my uncle got to my little brother. And I remember clearly having a nightmare in Australia where I like got sick to my stomach. And now back then, this was in 94, like it was still like rotary phones. I mean, I didn't have a cell phone to call home or anything. And I remember trying to get a hold of my mother, and I was like, is Ryan okay? Is everything okay? Because I had this like sickening, terrible nightmare about him where he was a ghost, and that he had been like, he just, something was wrong, right? Like it was either his ghost or he was dead or whatever. And so I called her and I was all freaking out about it or whatever. Well, and I learned later on that he had gotten to my little brother, and I learned that it was when I was in Australia. I knew that dream was the day that it happened. I mean, I don't know the date of the dream or anything like that, but I have a huge family. I have 5 brothers and sisters. I have all kinds, but I dreamt about Ryan that day. So anyway, when my uncle went away to the seminary back in, you know, when I was first born, he was away at the seminary and was ordained in 1971. I was born in 72. My mother and father split in 73, and we moved into his old bedroom at my grandparents' house. So all of his objects, and I remember his reel-to-reel camera equipment and things like that were in the closet. So later I came to realize when his brother drank himself to death that it was very likely that my uncle abused his own brother or served him up to his other priest friends. So in the beginning of 2012, which is the year now Father Joe Marino was murdered on October 13th, 2012. And I should say allegedly, I guess, but I can't bring myself to say that there's any debate anymore, especially after speaking to my uncle. So now when in the beginning of 2012, the year that Father Joe was murdered, in January and February, my uncle was at St. Mary's of the Lake in Hamburg, New York, and he was going through some things. He was in a lot of trouble for grooming a young boy who was either 10 or 11 or something like that, and he had messaged him on Facebook, "Love you," and the boy's mother found it, and Christine Hyder is the principal at that school, and she complained to the diocese about him and made it very clear that he was a problem and that he was grooming this boy, and got him, the diocese like announced that he was being put on medical leave. And when that happened, they sent him to rehab. So sex abuse rehab, not drug abuse rehab. So all the priests get sent to rehab when they get in trouble, and then after that they get sent to another parish. So he gets sent to rehab for 4 months. Now by the time he's about to get out, like in July-ish, he sends a letter to Bishop Malone, who's not yet in Buffalo, but is still in Boston, cleaning up after the Spotlight movie. So that's who they picked to be the new bishop in Buffalo, is someone who had that kind of experience dealing with Boston. So that tells you how bad Buffalo is. So that was in July. He sends a letter to Bishop Malone in Boston, and he says, I would like to attend your installation on August 10th. And he tells him, you know, I'm in rehab right now, but I've been a priest for 41 years, whatever. So now I believe he did go to the installation on August 10th. And then there was also some meeting on August 27th that I don't know what that was about, but now we're only weeks away from Father Joe's murder and weeks or days from my uncle being let out of rehab. He hated rehab. He called rehab a living hell. He, you know, just end me. Don't send me back. Just end me. He would say things like that.
Well, that treatment didn't work. And Art allegedly went on to abuse many more. Gina, who so dearly wished to protect her brother from her uncle, feels she failed him. But she's now made it her life's mission, no matter what the cost, to help get justice for her brother, victims of abuse she's come to take into her circle, and for Father Joe and other whistleblowers.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.
In September, he resigns from St. Mary's of the Lake officially and sends a letter to Bishop Malone resigning on September 18th of 2012. So 1 month from Father Joe's murder. The letters go a little bit quiet after that. Aside from September 22nd, my uncle sends a letter to Reverend James Walter. He was the Father Jim. He was the personnel board that would assign priests to certain positions or put them here or there, whatever. So on the 22nd, he sends out a letter asking for a new position within the diocese, even though he just got let out of rehab after 4 months after another accusation in 2012. So now there's no letters back and forth. And I got all of these letters from a Freedom of Information Act request that one of the TV stations did here in Buffalo. And when the Diocese of Buffalo was investigated by the New York State Attorney General, the TV station petitioned to have all these documents released. And when they did, I went and downloaded them all. And I was just searching for things and reading through and whatever. I didn't know anything about these letters, and I didn't even think about them until our first interview with my uncle on his deathbed. So when I reached out to you guys last year, I think your last episode of season one aired in like June. I remember calling you on the 4th of July, like interrupting your holiday and telling you, My uncle has pancreatic cancer. We got to get deathbed confessions.
Yeah, I remember.
So
you are interrupting my holiday. I do nothing but work, so I don't have a life.
Hello?
Hi, how's it going?
Hey, good. How about you?
I'm good. I can only talk for a few minutes because I'm just driving back to the ranch, but I will be much more...
So when Gina found out her uncle was on his last leg, she saw this as an opportunity to find out if her uncle knew anything about Father Joe's death. And she also knew that getting Sue on the line, Father Joe's sister, was the ticket. You see, Art kind of liked being involved at this point, dropping breadcrumbs, trying to just give little bits of information. He wants to be the star of any situation. The knower, and maybe the doer. Let's set the scene. It's August 2023. Art Smith is diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. His niece, Gina, finds out by way of other family members that he doesn't have much time left. He's been transferred into a final care facility. And the last person he ever thought would walk into his hospital room was his niece, Gina, who had essentially been mortal enemies with him her entire life. I imagine that he would picture one of his other siblings perhaps waltzing in, maybe a different niece or nephew, maybe a friend. But in walks Gina with two phones to call someone else he would never expect to be on the line, and another phone to record the conversation.
Okay, so the first time that Sue and I spoke to him was August 14th, 2023. Sue had just broken her foot and COVID was still a thing, like just at the end of COVID, especially for nursing homes. So anyway, she stayed home and I brought two phones. He didn't know we were coming, or I was coming. He didn't know anything about it. And I just signed in and I walked in and I sat a phone down on the table to record everything, and then I put Sue on the phone on speakerphone. So I was there probably 90% of the time it was Sue talking. On a rare occasion I would say something or chime in, but he doesn't like talking to me. He loved talking to Sue, but he didn't want to talk to me. We're mortal enemies. So I have Sue on the phone, she's on speaker, and I'm walking in, and I had no inkling that cool. He was as involved. Like, I didn't suspect him. He was not a suspect on my list when I went in there. I just figured he knew something, and that he might say what he knew, because he was like on his deathbed, and you know what's going to happen now. He's going to be dead. No problem. So when we first started talking, before I got Sue on the phone, he was like taken aback that I was there, because I got in his face at his brother's funeral, my uncle, earlier in the year. And because he had accused, when Ryan came forward and went on the news, my little brother Ryan, their big story, like the big defense, was that Gina, me, I convinced Ryan to lie. I made it all up, put it in Ryan's head, and got Ryan to go on the news and say all of this stuff happened to him. That was his thing. So he was at my uncle's funeral, and my uncle's, who had died, didn't like my priest uncle at all. So I was like pissed that he was there. I couldn't see my family and celebrate his life. And I had to face this guy again. Oh, I was so mad that he was there. So I got in his face and we kind of had a run in front of the casket, and I stormed out. And this is like, it like triggered me back to investigating again. And so my two cousins and I started texting and talking and investigating again, and we had come across the Church Militant piece about Father Joe, and then we ran into your podcast, and you were actively releasing them every other week at the time. And we thought they were old and we were like, oh my God, this is all going on right now. I got to reach out to these people, whatever. So that's how we ended up meeting you and Sue and all that. So fast forward to being in his room on that day, and I had no inkling that he might be a suspect. Well, when I walk in there, he says, he's like kind of trying to figure out why I'm there. Mm-hmm. And I told him that I was friends with Sue Marino and that I knew that he might have information for her about her brother. And he goes, oh, her brother. Like, he was like, oh, what do you mean you're talking about her brother and not your brother? You know, because he was trying to decide if he's kicking me out of this room or not. Mm-hmm. And because it wasn't about my brother, it was about Sue's brother, he was like, oh, well, that's interesting. I'm talking to him about Father Joe. And he says, well, that's why I'm dying. And it was such an odd placement of that line, like, that's why I'm dying, that there was no other reference to it.
Oh, Sue Marino.
Father Joe Marino's sister.
Yes.
Yeah. So I'm wondering, apparently you mentioned something to Charlie Specht that you knew what happened to her brother.
I know.
And there's a lot of people that deserve the truth.
That's for sure.
Father Joe was there for you. Father Joe was there for Mark. Father Joe was a good man.
I know. Very good man.
What else do you know about him?
I don't know. Yeah, I really don't want to open up a whole new can of worms because it's been too much.
What's been too much?
Everything. That's why I'm dying.
Why? It wasn't about the diocese or whatever. We're talking about Father Joe's murder. And he says, that's why I'm dying. I still don't understand that statement. I change the subject because he's not really giving me any information about Father Joe. And I start talking about our family. And he is so not into this conversation that I'm having. And he goes, so I didn't realize you knew Sue Marino. And he wants to change the subject back to Father Joe and away from anything to do with our family. And I thought that was interesting. So after that, I got Sue on the phone, and he wasn't super interested in speaking to Sue either until she said that Papa Joe had a dream that whoever killed, that Joey came to him in a dream and told him who shot him. And my uncle was like, what? Like, so into that conversation. He was so curious about that. That was when I saw him really connect with Sue and really want this conversation to keep moving. So, you know, they're going back and forth and whatever. And then he says to Sue, well, what did Malone say to Father Papa Joe when he had that meeting? Like, there was a very, like, he knew what was supposed to be covered in that meeting between Malone and Sue Marino. Why would he be so in tune with that conversation and know that that meeting was going to happen? Like, he knew all these little tidbits and details that, like, he was in rehab for the past 4 months. Why does he have any engagement in any kind of church goings on, right? But he knew that Papa Joe and Sue had a meeting with Malone and he asked about it.
But I've asked him a couple of times, but he won't say who they are. But he did mention La Puma. Do you think David La Puma had something to do with it?
That's a good question, and I would follow that up with, did Bishop Malone ever resolve anything with your dad after their last conversation?
No, because the one time dad I know had talked to him a couple of times, I met with him in 2000.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn. And you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. WATER to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Denny was having a little conversation about La Puma. And Sue made a comment that La Puma was on the computer. Oh, and my uncle says, yeah, I know all about that. Like, you don't even have to tell me about that part. I know that part. And then he says, but why? Why was he on the computer? And he starts sort of leading Sue, like trying to get her to ask the right questions to get to the crux of all of this, you know?
I don't know what he knew, the former bishop.
Right.
Do we know La Puma was there? It was witnessed that he was going through Joey's computer on the first floor.
Yes, I know. I know that. Yeah.
Okay. So I don't know if he was looking for the fax that Joey faxed to the Buffalo News. But, you know, if it was any true crime story that, you know, he was tampering with evidence when he took Joey's fax machine. Again, he was tampering with evidence.
Right. Why? Why was he doing that?
To see what Joey was going to expose.
Right. Exactly.
You know, they took his files. There's nothing past.
Because Joey was going to expose them, and he says, exactly. So he confirms the motive. The whole conversation here is him confirming the motive and confirming there was a murder. Like, there was no part of any of his letters back and forth or anything like that back at the time in 2012 when Father Joe was murdered. When he would refer to Father Joe's death, he would always say death. He would never say suicide. He would never say that he killed himself. It was always, you know, that it was his death and whatever. No inkling or conversation at all about self-harm or anything like that. So other things that he knew about was he made a comment about that La Puma spent about 50 minutes before the police were called. And there was one point where Sue was talking about the topics blog where somebody in January of 2013 had wrote a story about how La Puma went there with a gun and asked Joey to kill somebody. And, you know, that whole topic story. And his response to that was, right, I can see it happening that way. Almost like confirming that story. Like confirming whatever Sue has from that topics blog. He really, he didn't dispute any tidbit of it.
Can you confirm that all the stuff that he said to you was not anything that would have been really in the news or wasn't really in the church militant? I've never heard 50 minutes before, like, that he spent.
Yeah. That's what knocked me over about it.
Yeah.
Like, very specific down to the minute. Like, he was paying attention to the minutes. You know what I mean? He wasn't, like, you know, about an hour. He was 50 minutes. Like, he was counting. We were talking about the packet of information that Father Joe was getting ready to send. And I had been to Sue's house, a bunch of times. And I was on, she gave me a copy of Father Joe's tower hard drive. Not the laptop that LaPuma was on, but the desktop tower hard drive. And I was digging through that. And in the temporary printer files or whatever, I could see the most recent mailing labels that he printed with his little Dymo printer. And on there was the Buffalo News with the address. And I said, holy shit, Sue, I think he mailed it to her. He was gonna mail it, not just fax it. Now, my uncle didn't know anything about that. He didn't know about that conversation or that I was digging into the laptop yet or to the hard drive yet or any of that. And he says, well, I know that he was going to meet the nuncio on Monday and that he was going to the post office to mail the packet of information Monday. So he brought up the fact that it was being mailed and confirmed that.
I think it had to do with his wanting to talk to the nuncio in Washington, and David knew that. And I think it had a lot to do with that whole situation, because this happened on a Saturday, I believe, and Joe was going to go to the post office on Monday, if I remember, and that was all intercepted.
Oh, who took it?
We don't know.
Oh.
See, that because that all happened before he could do that. It all happened on the Saturday before he was going over for Mass at St. Lawrence.
So anyway, he was talking about what Father Joe was going to mail and go meet with the nuncio about, and he says, it was all intercepted.
And that was all intercepted.
Very clearly, confirmation, all of that was intercepted, right?
Wow.
And he starts talking about how, it had to be on Saturday because he was leaving Monday and the clock was ticking. You know, like, he got into all that stuff. So he says that, so all these little things, at the very end of this first conversation that day, Sue gets off the phone and she says goodbye and whatever. And I engage with him again after being pretty quiet for the whole hour or whatever they were talking. And I said to him, you know, I know that you told Charlie Specht that, you were put back into ministry because you blackmailed Bishop Malone. And he says, I think I might have written that in the letter. So he tells me that. He specifically said, I don't remember saying anything to Charlie Specht, but I put it in a letter that if I wasn't returned, that I would tell about Father Joe Marino. Like, he said that to me. So that's what made me go look in the Freedom of Information Act documents for the letter that he sent. Yes, I found this letter. It was dated October 17th, 2012. So it's 4 days after Father Joe Marino's murder. It's prior to the funeral. So it's on the Wednesday. The funeral was on Friday. So it's before the funeral.
Okay.
So he says, "Dear Bishop Malone, you were very gracious and obviously deeply concerned in calling the priests of the Diocese of Buffalo together to deal with the tragic death of Father Joe Marino. Your approach was honest, sincere, and necessary, and allowed us to process our grief in a way that cut to the core of what we were feeling. As you well know, there remain many questions over the way the diocese dealt with his life, ministry, and death. It is not over. I give you credit that you accepted the request of Joe's sister not to be principal celebrant of the Mass. That took courage. I know the feeling. I have been there. That may change, but by the time you get this letter," he's meaning like that he wasn't doing the funeral and that might change by the time he gets the letter. But anyway, he says, "I just hope that you heard, really heard, the voices of the priests who wonder why and how we are treated as we are. We are all sinners and sometimes victims. I am the first to admit that I am, but understanding, forgiveness, freedom, mercy, and compassion are the real marks of the Church of Jesus Christ. You should know that Joe and I spoke several times while he was at some of the lowest points of his life. We spoke candidly and in great detail. I know that his heart was in the right place and that he loved the people that he served and that they loved him. I'm deeply saddened by his death and understand very much what may have contributed to it. Also, I know that the personnel board of the Diocese of Buffalo is not to be trusted. I was recently betrayed by one of its members who said publicly that he would not support me. He is a personal friend of Chris Heider, the principal of the parish school in Hamburg, who also betrayed me after promising that she would stand beside me no matter what, and I believed her. I also gave her unconditional trust and responsibility for leadership in the school and trusted her totally, not to mention the significant salary raise that I provided to her to blend the school and the religious education programs together in a meaningful way. Not only did she turn against me, but she recently accused the maintenance man of 3 charges of sexual harassment. I know him. He's not that kind of man. Several trusted parishioners warned me over and over again in no uncertain terms, shortly before I was ousted and exiled from the parish that I loved, not to trust her or the deacon." Sorry about that.
No, it's okay.
"Not to trust her or the deacon Velasquez, a very dumb and nasty man, both of whom have strongly divided the parish, and I did not listen. They are not to be trusted, and they speak out of both sides of their mouths. They are not trustworthy. Go to the parish and celebrate Mass there and hear firsthand what the people think. You should seriously consider that. Your eyes will be opened. The 8th grade teacher," redacted, doesn't show it, "who called Child Protective Services on me when I arrived on the property to retrieve my funeral ritual from the church, has a strong and hateful vendetta against the church because of the loss of her position as principal of our Mother of Good Counsel School in Blaisdell. This was told to me by the principal in so many words. This teacher is such a mean woman. I believe that it is unfair that you be guided by people of this misguided mentality. After all that I've been through, and it has been a real purgatory, my good name and reputation have not been fairly, justly vindicated for my family, friends, and the community. I am fully prepared to take further action should some become necessary. And I will. Thank you for seeking justice on my behalf. I believe you are. Very respectfully yours, Father Art Smith."
Whoa. That certainly sounds like a threat.
Yeah. I remember
the first time I read the letter, and when Gina reread it to me when we were podcasting, just being like, that is... A lot of the stuff you're going to find with Art Smith, and this isn't going to end up being the Art Smith podcast, it's just he knew a lot, and he's leading us to stuff that has to do with Father Joe.
This letter sounds like he's even, like, leading on, like, hey, I know something. I mean, he says Father Joe's life, ministry, and death, but there's a lot of questions, and it's not over.
Yeah, and
then... it's that letter saying, like, if I have to take action to protect my good name, I will. I mean...
And you're gonna come to... Sorry to interrupt you. You're going to come to hear in more of the Art Smith tapes. The more you, like, listen to them, or the more we listen to them, it's like you pick up on another thing where you're like, oh.
Freudian slip.
Yeah, Freudian slip. Or, yeah, you meant to say something there. And I feel like that letter is very similar to that, where it's like, why in that letter are you even mentioning Father Joe when this is supposed to be about, you know,
your reputation being dragged through the mud exactly. by some principle. But he starts off with, like, as you know, there's a lot of questions with Father Joe's death. And I know some of the answers. That's kind of what he's saying. And
it's a threat.
Oh, it's certainly threatening.
Yeah, it's definitely.
I kind of believe that, like, Gina was his pathway to kind of take this action. He's like, well, you know, she's here. I'm going to let it all out.
Yeah. He definitely didn't want her there at first. But then, like I said in the podcast, like, he likes to be the star of any show. You know, I believe he knows so much more. Part of me even thinks he was maybe there. We don't know. We have all the security tape footage. We're still going through that. Part of me thinks he was there, or someone that was there gave him firsthand knowledge.
That's my belief. I think he knows who was there, and he talked to those people, and they told him things that occurred.
Yeah. We, I think, don't reveal it on this episode. Like, Greg and I are recording this little outro afterwards, but one of the major things that you're going to hear Art Smith say later on in this series is that he knows that the package that Father Joe was sending to the Buffalo News was intercepted. How would he know it was intercepted? Like, what? There's literally no way to know that.
Unless he intercepted it or was privy to the person that did.
Yes. And his name would 1,000% be on that list.
Oh, he had good reason for it to, you know, for it to be intercepted. He'd wanted to be intercepted. Yeah, it was.
Yeah, he was one of the most prolific abusers in the Buffalo Diocese. And one thing I want to add, so Gina touches on, you know, the Spotlight scandal, and I don't know if you guys have seen that movie, but it's actually, you know, a real thing that reporters exposed in the Boston area. But Bishop Malone was the former bishop, and I find this very interesting. So one of the Spotlight reporters, who's now like a professor of journalism at Northeastern University, he says, in regards to Bishop Malone, when he resigned or whatever, he said, the Buffalo Catholic Diocese didn't learn from what happened in Boston and continued to get in trouble. Because it happened in Boston, then they hired Bishop Malone. Like, he did the cleanup there.
He was the cleanup crew.
Yeah, exactly.
He had already dealt with a, you know, extremely salacious, very well broadcasted situation.
But it's crazy that maybe the Diocese of Buffalo thought that was a good framework or whatever, meaning, but they'd been exposed for their cover up. But so he says, quote, originally, and his name is Matt Carroll, and he was one of the Spotlight reporters. He said, quote, originally you had this sort of steady drip drip of stories and the church never could get in front of it. And they were very, very slow to acknowledge there were huge issues and slow to release the names of priests. And it was also to drag out of them. And it was also hard to drag it out of them, he said. I don't know why the same kind of thing happened here. It's stunning, quite honestly, that they didn't
learn those sort of lessons.
I'm sure it wasn't a really like sought after position, you know, to come in and be the Bishop of Buffalo when all of this was falling apart right after the Boston scandal. You know, I think Bishop Malone, they just thought was the right guy. He dealt with it before and was pretty good at covering it up. So, I mean, like, I think they were kind of looking for, you know, a shady con man to sweep some dust under the rug. You know, I don't think they were trying to make the right decision in the eyes of the victims and the public. They were trying to make the right decision to cover their asses.
That's 100% correct.
I think. And they clearly did.
That's our opinion. But yeah.
Yes, our opinion.
I agree with you. Like, he was the right man for the job that they wanted him to fill. He filled the shoes they wanted him to fill. And it took people like Siobhan, his O'Connor. His former assistant, who I'm surprised she doesn't. I mean, she probably does fear for her life, but I'm also so surprised Gina doesn't fear for her life. I mean, we're lucky to not be in Buffalo, but like what we've exposed is, you know.
There's a little bit of fear.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's also a little bit of Christmas cheer.
Yeah.
Because today is Christmas.
Yeah, so we'll end it on a happy note.
And we are releasing this episode publicly. It already came out on Patreon, but we're just doing a little bonus
recap.
Christmas recap. There's been a lot of big groundbreaking developments in the last 2 weeks. More data and information coming in on both Father Joe's email address and his IP addresses, and I think we have confirmed that he had a static IP, which would confirm that either someone logged into his email or took his computer to Poland 4 years after his death, and so we're off to the races on that.
Yeah. I know that kind of stuff has been, like, confusing to you guys. I never read reviews, but I did read, like, one where someone was like, oh, it's all this IP stuff. It is actually important, though. It is uncovering the shady nature of his death, that
his computer was
stolen.
There is a priest right now actively using Father Joe's email.
Yeah.
In the Buffalo Diocese right now, today, last week, a month ago, for the past however many years, still using Father Joe's email. Why? We don't know. But more to come on that.
Mm-hmm.
Just this IP address lead has pushed some other doors wide open, mm-hmm. including an old internet provider that the diocese hired and employed back in the day. And then there was some criminal.
There's a lot. There's a lot coming. Sue stayed up all night after she, that's Father Joe's sister, after she listened to Greg's episode on the IP addresses. And Sue is not tech savvy, but became tech savvy apparently overnight.
Determination.
Yeah, determination.
Sheer willpower.
Yeah. It's like, Sue, I don't even know what you're saying, honestly. But yeah, it's, we're getting closer and closer and closer. And I truly believe that we will get justice for Father Joe, and we will figure out, at the very least, who was specifically involved. We may never know who pulled the trigger, but
there's also a priest too we have found out that has been apparently told of the murder. Like, someone confessed to him in a confession, so we can't, but
yeah. There's a lot coming, guys, but
there's so many breadcrumbs. By the end of this, we're going to have a whole loaf of bread.
There we go. And that's you need to go make your beer bread.
I got
to
make
Christmas.
Beer bread. It's Christmas.
Thank you guys so much for listening. We appreciate it. Thank you for being with us on this journey. If you want to see security cam footage, that anonymous letter that we read last season that was sent to Sue, at least snippets of it, because some of it we have to keep, you know, private. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff visually on Patreon. Art Smith actually speaking. We'll be uploading more of that too. So there's a lot of stuff over there. So if you want to go to Patreon, it's deadlypodcast@patreon.com. And yeah, thank you guys, and have a Merry Christmas.
Ho, ho, ho. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. And to all, a good night.